Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the October 23rd, 2016 session, focusing on 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 through 18. Did it matter? I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm David Adams.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
We welcome back to the podcast David Adams. He was with us on the last episode, and among other things, David teaches at the Baptist Seminary of Kentucky, I believe in Christian education and administration. But he's also the editor for the Faith Element session pages. David, we're glad you're back again.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
All right, David. Well, since you're here, would you be able to help us get started with a look at the text for this episode?
Sure. 2 Timothy ends with a passage that pauses to reflect on the kinds of things that someone might consider at the end of their life, using Paul's death as a template. In doing so, it raises important questions of what we would do, maybe what we should do, when we face the end. The writer of this passage shows Paul as expressing his feelings toward people who might have been close to him, asking for loved ones to gather nearby, warning his followers about an old adversary, arranging to address some unfinished business, and basically helping people to understand his perspective on the situation. That's a pretty good model to follow. I remember in the early days of cable television, when the various stations were not so slick and commercialized with their presentation, the early Comedy Central channel was always trying to fill up its programming and draw sponsors. But in the meantime, it put little tidbits on the air when they went to a commercial. One of the most memorable ones was just their logo over the words, "We're all going to die." I think this was supposed to remind us that we should retain the ability to laugh at things because life is so short. It certainly was not meant to be depressing. Still, it turned out to be a poignant reminder to some of us that our time here really is limited. The issue was also addressed in a Laura Nyro song made famous back in the 60s by a band known as Blood, Sweat, and Tears, which sang, "I'm not scared of dying, and I really don't care. If it's peace you find in dying, well, let the time be near. If it's peace you find in dying, when the dying time is here, just bundle up my coffin, because it's cold way down there. My troubles are many. They're deep as a well. I can swear there ain't no heaven, but I pray there ain't no hell. Swear there ain't no heaven and pray there ain't no hell, but I'll never know by living. Only my dying will tell. Give me my freedom for as long as I be. All I ask of living is to have no chains on me. And all I ask of dying is to go naturally. Only want to go naturally. Don't want to go by the devil. Don't want to go by the demon. Don't want to go by Satan. Don't want to die uneasy. Just let me go naturally. And when I die, when I'm dead, dead and gone, there'll be one child born in the world to carry on, to carry on." So here's 2 Timothy, an early second century work holding Paul's final days as an example for all the ways we might ideally face our final days. Looking back at the life we lived and how our days were poured out for things that were more important than just ourselves. Hoping that we can see those days and the sacrifices we chose to make as having been worth it. Concluding our business with people. Gathering our loved ones. Warning people of potential issues they might face from people who gave us a hard time. Helping people to be at peace with our passing. And glorifying God as we prepare to move to the next life. I don't know what we can do to top that. What's the alternative? To remain alienated from people? To be angry with God for either the things we've done or the opportunities we think we've lost? To take our secrets to the grave? I don't think the writer of this work did us all a service in reminding us that our faith gives us the ability to face the end of our lives with a sense of integrity that can move from fear to anticipation. From now on, there is reserved for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. And not only me, but to all those who have longed for his appearing. Like the song says, we don't want to die uneasy, and we don't have to.
So, wow. So when are y'all going to die?
You know, there's something online they've been showing, I think it was Google this week, they had an article, Lifehacker had an article on how you're going to die statistically.
Really?
You can go look it up. You can enter your information, and they would actually tell you about how long you're going to live and what you're probably going to die of, and just in case you're curious.
Did you do it?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I don't want to lose the element of surprise.
Yeah.
Besides, yeah. By this point, there are probably so many people filled with hope. I don't want to just give them a little extra bit. I don't want to let them off that easy.
listening to your song made me think of in college, you know, at the end of a lot of college experiences, you have to take some kind of capstone experience. And I took a class called Death and Dying, and it was an exceptional class. And, you know, when you essentially you talk about end of life issues in this class, but ultimately you're talking about how to live your life well. But every day a student had to bring in a song or poem about death. My favorite day is when my roommate brought in, propped me up beside the jukebox when I die. That was a pretty, good day. You know, most people tried to bring in something serious, but she was one who lived life with humor, and we all enjoyed that day. But it makes me wonder, as you were talking, David, it made me wonder this kind of reflection that we see Paul doing, and that your introduction kind of calls us to. Is that something we can practice through life, or is it something that more naturally and easily comes at the end of life?
Well, I certainly think, I think we could. I wonder if folks at that station of their life toward the end, they sort of somewhat feel forced into it.
Mm. And that's
your question's a good one. I mean, I think we ought to do more reflecting, because as you referenced your roommate, I think, you know, when we reflect on death, doesn't that have an impact on how we try to live? Sorry, David, I think I cut you off.
That's okay. No. I was being silly, you know, when I asked when are you going to die. But I mean, my point is, I mean, we don't know, right? I mean, some of us might not make it through this week. We don't know. If some people do have a sense of, you know, when they're going to die, they've given the message, you know, you've got this long to live, and they have a chance to make amends or at least whatever steps they want to take to tie up loose ends and prepare. But in many ways, we always are potentially within days of it, right? I mean, we don't know. And so I think you're right. I think an awareness that death is real and part of our existence, hopefully, and the unexpectedness of it usually leads us maybe to live differently.
Yeah, and I hear you ask that question. The first thought that pops into my mind is, when are you going to live?
Oh.
Because you're looking at Paul here. Paul has his life in order. He's done things he can look back on and be proud of. And
yeah.
You know, this whole epistle is written with the idea of living a life that's worthy and becoming what a person of faith ought to be. You know, and so he's ending it. I think they end this letter looking back and saying, see, now that you've done all these things, you can look back with a sense of integrity. It's not so scary. In fact, it's something to look forward to because I've been living the right way. Maybe a lot of our faith we put into afterlife and dying and things like that, but we don't talk about what we're going to do between now and then.
Yeah.
You know, we put too much at that end time, and maybe we shouldn't.
There's a good quote about that. Some people focus so much on afterlife, they're no good for this life, or...
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to talk about?
Google. Oh, yeah. They're so heaven-focused that they're of no earthly good.
That's it.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Clearly, when you look at this passage, Paul had been doing a lot of things. He had a busy life, impacting a lot of other people's lives. And this was just closing that up. But he didn't spend his whole life talking about when he's going to die and, oh, I'm suffering, isn't God treating me poorly or anything like that.
Or I'm spending my life preparing for the next, right?
Right.
I mean, he was doing important things here and now. He was making a difference in people's lives now.
Right. He would tell people that this did prepare him for the next, but I think that was more to inspire them.
Yeah.
But Nikki, your question, if I recall it, was related to, you know, these kind of conversations naturally occur at the end of life, whereas there might be some great benefit in having these much earlier in our lives. And that's particularly, that hits me as a pastor, because I have sort of a natural in with folks, particularly parishioners, that there's maybe there's not an expectation, but I'm welcomed in. It's not a shock when I talk to people about their own mortality.
Sure.
And so why could I not use that same pastoral authority, if I want to be so bold as to call it that, just to, you know, to encourage folks to allow reflections on death to guide their living. That's particularly challenging to me. And I mean, this is interesting that we're talking about this tonight, because just this afternoon, when we're recording this, I was at the home of one of my parishioners who has received a significant diagnosis in the last several weeks, and she chose to have some treatment that ultimately has proven not to be successful. She has a blood disorder. And over the past 24 hours, after meeting with some doctors and after feeling just so rotten, she's decided to discontinue treatment and really feels at peace with that. The doctor said, you could continue treatment. And we can certainly do that. You will sort of be a resident of the hospital going forward if we need to do that. And she said, that's not what I want. Hospice came in. And she's in the process of trying to get some affairs in order. She talked with me about her memorial service, which is funny, by the way. She mentioned all the music that she wanted, lots of wedding music, and joyful music. And I sort of mentioned that's not going to leave me much time to preach, which I think is sort of the point. But we had a great conversation. And what struck me as I was walking out, two things struck me. We didn't have time for the fluffy conversation that we often have with folks. The first 5, 10, 50, 20 minutes, you know, we're together. How's the weather? You know, how about them Braves? That kind of stuff that we didn't have time for that. She knows her time may be coming near. We got down to talking and we had a great time. The second thing I walked away, which particular to this passage, she expressed gratitude, and I asked her for maybe some things that she's grateful for, and she expressed gratitude that all along this, she hasn't been alone. Her doctors have provided good care. Her family has not left her side. And I thought, what a great gift that she doesn't feel alone. And isn't that what, if I can get back to the scripture, what Paul is talking about here? This is verse 16, at my first defense, no one came to my support, but all deserted me. But the Lord stood by me and gave me strength. And my friend with whom I met today expressed, you know, she was so grateful that she's always felt God nearby through this. And I mean, she knows it's a natural to feel alone, but she's been gifted with that. It was a wonderful conversation. I mean, I don't mean to be flippant with it, but
yeah,
it really was. I'm grateful that I'm able to walk alongside folks, and they invite me in to have those conversations. It's a holy responsibility.
I asked the question because the story you just told, she has come to the end of her life, and it sounds like she is content. She is at peace. Mm-hmm. There are people who do come to the end of life, and they are not. And so I'm someone who likes to be prepared as much as possible. I want to have the conversations before they matter. It's like, I want my mom to tell me, I want my parents to tell me what they want at their funeral when we're not thinking about their funeral about to happen, right? Like, I want everything planned ahead of time. Cause I don't want to have to be doing it when it actually matters. But it makes me wonder if having these kinds of reflections and conversations when death is not imminent. One, I genuinely wonder, can we do that effectively? You know, or is that something that is better spurned by the moment? But if we can, is there an element of spiritual practice in that kind of reflection that can help inform how we are living? So maybe it's I don't know what the word is, maybe the antithesis of if you die tonight, are you going to go to heaven? You know, maybe it's if you died today, have you done the things here? Were the things that you did here worthy of a person of faith, to borrow from David Adams' language?
That's really interesting. And that sort of turns that, where would you spend eternity? Well, you know, and that's not an unimportant question, but
sure.
But what am I doing with the time I have now here on earth? I've never done the exercise, but have y'all heard of whether it's certain classes or groups where folks will write their own obituary?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I first, you know, I thought, what a morbid kind of thing to do. But the more I think about it, I think, well, and it's not about saying nice things about yourself, but what would you want to have accomplished? What spirit would you want to endure? Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Yeah.
And have y'all ever done that?
I think I had to do it in my death and dying class. I mean, that would make sense, right? I think I remember doing that.
So did you feel differently after doing the obituary? Did it change?
A long time ago.
Yeah.
But I do. I mean, we did a lot of exercises in that class that left you, when you were done, going,
You know, there's a whole branch of philosophy that's actually centered around much of what we're discussing here. This idea of somehow when we are sober and honest about the reality of our own deaths, we also often can gain a perspective around what it means to really live life fully, to live life authentically. Mm-hmm. Or as David Adams said earlier, you know, when are you going to start living? Because, I mean, how much of our lives, an existentialist will ask, you know, or do we spend just going through the motions, through the routines, things that ultimately don't matter, that we're not going to be proud about, or worse, avoiding the things so that when we do reach that deathbed, there is regret that we didn't try this or give this a shot or experience this when we could have. And yes, we'll all have regrets. But the idea being that the reality of the recognition of that we will all die can be a motivator, in that it clarifies that there is a limit to how much time we have. There's a limit to how much energy we will get to expend and how much opportunity we will face. I mean, even Steve Jobs commented, one of his more famous comments was that this, he said, no one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It is life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. And I don't think he was meaning it clears out old people to make way for young people. You know, he was saying in our own lives that reality of death can be a motivator to clarify, what do I want to do with this time I have? And maybe that's part of, I think, the Christian call is to live life fully. It's a gift from God. And these hours and days and months we have with these people we love and these challenges we face, those are rich and powerful moments that we can either waste or do something about.
And I get this sense from reading too, and what Paul's having to say, it's almost as if he understands that to many, he's a sort of living monument to what God can do in somebody's life and how God can change things. And he's probably thinking, what is the shape of that monument? You know, is this going to be helpful for someone else? Not how I feel about my passing, but have I really helped everybody else so that when I do go, it's going to be something that enlightens people and leaves them with a lasting impression that can change lives, even as I've done it while I've been living?
I feel a little bit like this should be Ash Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That these are kind of the questions that we engage, because as we were talking, I found myself going, where all of this is good, but where's the Christian connection, right? Because it could sound very, you know, just pop culture wisdom that we're kind of saying. But the truth is, we have a practice of being aware of our own mortality, and that kind of that becomes incarnate when we put the ashes on our forehead at Ash Wednesday service, and then we travel through Lent. But there is a sense of remembering that from the dust we came into the dust we will return, and letting that awareness and knowledge affect how we choose to live the life that we've been given.
That's interesting that you were thinking of Ash Wednesday. And I don't disagree with you. But I was thinking of All Saints Day.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because, see that. And it's another great connection. I don't disagree with anything, but my mind was thinking that, you know, we often talk about saints being those holy ones, particularly special ones. But according to the New Testament, you don't have to be special. You don't have to be holy. You don't even have to be dead. That if you're a member of the body of Christ, and we all are, then we're already saints. And so part of the challenge for me always in All Saints is, how am I living into my sainthood now? You know, All Saints is one of those ampersand days, to go back to last week's episode. It's both and. It's honoring those who have gone before and realizing that one day our names will be read. It's an honoring of those upon whose shoulders we stand, and an acknowledgement that we are that for someone else. And we have a responsibility to live into that sainthood now and today. I don't know. That's just where my mind went. I think both of those holidays have something to say to us here.
Well, we're certainly a lot closer to All Saints Day than we are Ash Wednesday.
Yes, we are.
It's just a week away.
Yeah, a week away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's a wonderful way for us to reflect on All Saints, to remember Paul's reflections here and how are we living into that role as well now.
We probably, this will take us off course, I'm afraid, but as we're talking about, you know, these end of life conversations, we often talk about, whom do I need to forgive? What relationships do I need to restore? And here in verse 14, Paul sort of, you know, Alexander the coppersmith did me great harm. The Lord will pay him back for his deeds. I mean, it's sort of
you know what you did.
That's right. So, I mean, I don't know if we want to talk about that. I just find that interesting. We all often talk about, you know, let's don't go to bed mad, that kind of things. Forgive who you need to forgive. And Paul doesn't seem to do that. But anyway.
That makes me think of King David. If you think about when King David is on his deathbed and he is giving his words of wisdom to Solomon before he takes the crown. Mm. He says, by the way, there are a few people you need to take care of.
Yep.
Get rid of. And then gives him a list. You know, like, you don't want these people around when you come into your own. And so I, for good or for ill, that made me think of King David.
It just goes to show the beauty of the ampersand. I mean, these were human beings.
They were.
Sinners and saints. I mean.
Yeah.
So, all right, to go back to last week, is this inspired? Is this scripture inspired? Absolutely it is. Was it written by a human being? Yeah.
Yeah.
It sure was. With God's inspiration, it was still a human being who maybe hadn't gotten all the forgiveness, mm-hmm. or extended all the forgiveness, mm-hmm. when he heard his deathbed. And I had forgotten about King David too. That's exactly right. Same thing.
And, you know, I think we've talked, you know, in notes as we've read Timothy and a little bit in the last podcast about how when this was written, the person writing probably isn't Paul. But it's someone writing in the vein of Paul. And so Paul, his life may have changed dramatically, but he never lost his arrogance. You know, I mean, like, did not change or go away. He just became arrogant about something else. And so I mean, it's just, and certainly he developed humility in some ways that he did not have before, but he still was who he was. And that arrogance is part of what made him so exceptional at what he did, right? Like, those gifts are, there's a flip side to them as well. And so, I mean, Paul was definitely human.
Yeah. Very, we call it evangelistic zeal.
I call it arrogance.
But that's, I mean, that, would he have been able to do all he had done if he didn't? No, I mean, he couldn't shake the Pharisee, maybe. I don't know.
Certainly. Probably. I mean, that was a part of who he was.
Yeah.
I mean, that was always going to be baggage and gift.
But strength of spirit. Yeah. Let's call it that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, sure. I was incredibly fortunate to be at seminary when John Claypool was a preaching professor at McAfee, which is where I went. And he, I was gifted to be able to take classes from him. And then while he was on faculty, he developed a blood cancer. And ultimately, that is what ended his life. But there was a point where he had to have a bone marrow transplant, and that it was one of those situations where he has to be, you know, isolated for a number of days, and it was quite an ordeal. And this was kind of the last ditch effort to see if they could turn his prognosis around. And a friend of mine who was quite close to John Claypool called him and was having a conversation with him, and it was near Easter. And John said to my friend, I'm sitting here reflecting on, and gosh, I don't know how many years of ministry, probably 40 or 50 years of ministry. And I was wondering, was it worth it? Was all of the years of ministry worth it? And then he said to my friend, the ground still holds. And I think that he had a sense that, yes, it was worth it. And it wasn't just because of him. It was that there was something greater holding him and moving through him, that God was working through him. And that made me think a little bit of what Paul said, that ultimately at the end, Paul had this realization that he had done all of these things, but none of it would have mattered if it had not been accomplished because of Christ, because of the energy from Christ, because of how Christ has worked through him.
What a great story. Thanks for sharing. Well, we've had a good chat about a tough subject. And I hope for all our listeners, as well as for each of us, that we will live long lives, but full lives, living up to our potential and taking advantage of the great gift of life that God has given to each of us. Thanks for this conversation.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.